Welcome back to Coast AM. So now we're going to address the tougher questions, like what is the difference between spirit and the soul? Or if reincarnation exists, how many times do we actually come back? And do we have to come back? Do we actually have a choice in the matter? These questions and more are the top of the discussion we're going to have with former skeptic and private investigator Bob Olson. He's been an afterlife investigator and psychic medium researcher since 1999, and he looks at the topics that we're going to discuss tonight from an investigator's perspective. He has a formula where he draws conclusions based on the examination of the evidence, using logic and reason and pragmatism. He really has a lot of pragmatism, sorry, he has a lot of evidence-based conclusions that he draws upon. And then all of that, then he uses his own bias or expectation of what he wants after he goes after all of the evidence. So we're going to have this conversation tonight. I'm looking forward to this as being someone who's had an NDE and understands what the afterlife looks like, or what the experience is like. So I'm looking forward to this conversation with Bob Olson. We will be back after the break. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr, and I have so many questions about the afterlife, and I believe that my next guest, Bob Olson, can answer a few of them because his entire perspective here comes from a skeptic and private investigator's point of view. And Bob really looks at the topics of afterlife from an investigator's perspective. And questions that I want to know are, why can't we remember what we were in a previous life? What does the soul do when it decides to come back, and why does it want to come back? And if we could remember, would we do it in a different way? Wouldn't that be interesting? Welcome to the show, Bob. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm really happy to be here. Looking forward to this.
Me too. Me too. So, first of all, let's start with you. How long were you an investigator for, a PI, for a long time?
Yeah, it was a long time. I think when I started investigating the afterlife, it had been about 15 years, and I continued it for a while after that while I was still doing it, but eventually got out of it and just went full time with the afterlife.
So, what started you on the topic of afterlife investigation?
Yeah, it wasn't anything I ever was interested in, that's for sure, and I didn't dream of it as a little boy.
Yeah. Didn't go to college to be an afterlife investigator,
they
right?
didn't have that
It
course.
didn't have right.
But my father died in 97. He was 64 years old. I was I think 34, and very first time ever, even though I had, loved ones who had died before him, did I wonder where he went, if he went anywhere? And it was nagging me, these questions. Where did he go? If he went somewhere, what is that place like? And, is he okay? Does
So
he
you weren't brought
deserve?
up with any particular religion?
I grew up Catholic, but we weren't good Catholics, probably. We went Christmas, we went Easter, we went a few times during the year, and that sort of a thing. So, but I went through catechism pretty much my whole childhood, even up through high school, and so that was my background. But it wasn't ever a strong foundation for me because I did always have a lot of questions. And I found early on, I actually remember way, way back, early catechism, asking questions and sort of being shut down by asking too many questions that didn't seem to be answered in any specific way.
There was
And
no answer. There was just believe.
there was belief, it's like I can actually remember, how do we really know there's a God, asking that question. And the teacher, I guess you'd call him, said, well, we know there's a God because there's the sky and there's trees and there's the ocean. And so I was
Right.
like, okay.
So, coming from your perspective, you became a skeptic, or was that a choice of yours?
Not at all. I mean, it was just a way of thinking, and I really do attribute it. It's funny, we just got through Christmas here. I do attribute it to, and I think this happens with a lot of people. You know, we have things like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy. And as a boy, I'm sure this happens with girls too, but as a boy, there's a point where all of a sudden some kids find out sooner that these things are, you know, not what everybody's saying. And so we, those of us who want to hang on to that get teased and feel like the fool. And I actually believe there's a point with some of us, and I think that's what happened with me, is I'm not going to be made the fool again. I'm not going to believe in anything until I can prove it for myself.
Until you can really. So now, was your father a scientist, or did he have any particular type of belief?
You know, not really. He was a truck driver, and mm-hmm. you know, he struggled to get by in life, and that was more of his focus than anything else. And you know, his mother, my grandmother, was more of the strict Catholic, and she would go a lot, and she, you know, had all those religious beliefs that she would teach us. She wasn't pushing them on us, but that was just her mentality. That was her belief system. And so if anything, he got it from her, but otherwise he was just trying to get through life and wasn't too focused on religion at all.
Hey, listen, truck drivers are some of the best philosophers out there. You have a lot of time on the road. They're great callers when they call in. They have great questions. So, all right, so have you ever been in the position now with being an afterlife investigator of actually having to try an investigation of the afterlife in maybe a court of law? Have you ever been in that position?
No. In fact, I knew that once I went public, you know, that I was investigating the afterlife, that I actually really wouldn't be able to work as a private eye anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was because once you go around telling people that you believe in this stuff, that could easily be used against me in a court of law. So if they were trying mm-hmm. to, if the opposite side, if I was working for the plaintiff attorney and the defense attorney wanted to discredit me with the jury, they could just easily, you know, make a mockery of, you know, my work in this field.
Well, when you do that, let us know, because it will be the first. I think it would be fascinating.
It would be interesting, yeah.
So what caused you to believe in the afterlife? Did your father help with that from the other side?
He did. You know, I didn't realize it at first. You know, when you're a skeptic and, you know, your father dies and you decide you're going to investigate to learn if life after death exists, because you're a skeptic, you don't really even know where to start. So it took me close to 2 years, I think it was a year and a half, before I found any evidence, and because I didn't know where to go. So I was going to psychics and tarot readers and astrologers. That was all I knew back then. In fact, back then, this is the late 90s, most people didn't even know what a medium was yet, and it wasn't a household word like it is today. And it wasn't until, you know, almost 2 years later that I finally heard about a medium, learned what that was, had my brother-in-law had gone to one, and all the information he was getting from this stranger to him was what I considered evidence. And evidence for a private investigator is everything. I was told never bring anything, you know, by the lawyers, never bring anything that's not evidence, you know, to us, because we can't bring that to court.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way I thought. And the information that he got in his reading was evidence-based, names and dates and memories that this stranger could never have known about him.
Specifically what, though, specifically?
Specifically, for him, actually, what I remember is that the medium was naming all his coworkers, and these are, you know, all kinds of, not just regular names like Steve and Bob, and, you know, they were unusual names, and because there was some message that was trying to get through about his work, and that was one of the things that I still remember, you know, however many years later. I think it was 17 years ago. I still remember today, and that's what happened with me. My grandmother came through when I first had my first reading, and she named all my grandmother's grandchildren. There was, you know, a bunch of us, and she didn't come through with names that were not a grandchild, and didn't, you know, and got them all correct. Just first names only. It wasn't first and last names, but that's enough. I mean, that's really quite a coincidence. To be
all of them. Now, I mean, What other types of, because you could basically look something like that up. So how else could that person have really shown some evidence that no one else would be able to know that wouldn't be something that you could look up?
Well, I got a great example of that. But the other thing I have to remind people is that this was 1999, and the internet isn't what it is today. So today, we live in the mindset of recognizing we can punch somebody's name in and find out all kinds of things about them on the internet. That wasn't true in 1999. But the other thing was, I only gave this medium my first name. I drove to this person's house and got the reading in person. I took off my wedding ring and I made my wife stay in the car and hide. I didn't dress in any way that would indicate, give any clues. And I was kind of a jerk, really, in my yes or no answers. Even sometimes when the answer was yes, I would say no just to try to fool her. And and so I didn't give anything away. She knew my name was Bob, and that was it. But one of the great things that came through, my father did come through, and he's now come through in almost every reading, I think every reading that I've ever had, which is hundreds. But he conveyed through this medium, again, she didn't know me, I didn't know her, and he said, "One of my proudest moments was watching you play the solo in the middle school band on your saxophone." And being a long-haul truck driver, he was gone for weeks at a time. He didn't make too many events, and that was one thing that he did make. And I was playing the solo. There was only two solos, and I was excited about it. And I can remember him being in the audience and me being on stage playing my saxophone. It's a lot of details for her to know I played the saxophone, to know I played in the middle school band concert, and to know that my dad was there. And that would have been one of his proudest moments. So it was a good hit.
And so now your father kind of acts as a guide from the other side in all of the journeys that you take now. Is that your experience? Is that what you were saying? He comes through in all of your readings?
Yeah, exactly. He's always there. And he's not always the only, I mean, he's not always the only person that shows up. At the beginning, he would have been maybe the main person to show up when I was first getting readings with mediums. But a lot of times he'll just show up and acknowledge, they'll acknowledge that he's there and not necessarily have a lot to say. But
Do you see a difference between psychics and mediums? Do you think some are truly gifted, or some just have enough experience of saying, "I remember when you were there at that moment in high school," type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like anything. I think it's like art and music and even writing. You know, some people are just very more naturally gifted at it than others. But there's really three aspects to both psychics and mediums. Psychics being people who sort of read energy, read your aura, and are more likely to predict the future. Mediums who communicate with people in spirit. You have the natural ability, some are more naturally gifted than others. Then you have training, which is really important, meaning, you know, if someone who's giving 10 readings a week is getting a lot more experience than someone who's giving one reading a month,
It's like a
they're
muscle,
friends.
right? The more you exercise it,
Yeah,
the
and so that's a really experience, but then you have the training when you go to other, you know, mediums of credibility and reputation who then teach you how to be better at what you do. So experience and training and natural ability, you put those three together. And I've had people with just a lot of experience and good training without as much natural ability, and I can tell the difference, but they actually gave better readings than some people with natural ability and not much of the other two.
I trained for a while as at a psychic institute, and it was about a 5-year process where I would sit in front of somebody who would come in for a quote reading, and we were just in the student type of atmosphere, and I was told to just close my eyes and look for images that would appear in my mind, and the images that would appear would be really oddly specific, and the person would say, "Yeah, that makes sense." And these are usually images that they were projecting in their mind's eye. So it caused me to go into a, I guess, an inquiry of how we project these holographic images all day long of memories, what drives our life. It's a fascinating topic from training, from doing it for a while. And then inevitably, after 5 years, I got to be pretty good at it. Didn't go back to it after that, but it's something that you, from experience, you can definitely grow into and test as you go along and see different layers there as you go along. I would get a feeling inside my body when something was the truth, and it would feel like an elevator dropping, where you would be in a really fast-moving elevator and it would drop. That would be my clue that something was the truth. So how do you tell if another psychic is telling the truth or not? How do you gauge the really truthful psychics?
I mean, to me, again, it's always based on the evidence. So, you know, it's a matter of the hits and the misses, but I don't really count the misses too much. It's more about the hits, because a lot of times misses are misinterpretations. The message that they're getting is always accurate, but how they interpret that message it sometimes isn't. Mm-hmm. That's why I always recommend it's like the mediums, just tell me what you're getting. Don't try to make an interpretation of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can, let me do the interpretation of that. But if they're coming through with hits, I'm counting the hits, there's also a quality of hits. So some are better higher quality than others. So there's hits, yes, it's true, but it's very vague and general, and it could possibly apply to anyone. And then there are others that are much more specific and seemingly random, and yet it applies to me and probably wouldn't apply to most other people, and it's something that I know is true. That's a high-quality hit for me. And so the more high-quality hits, to me, the better the psychic or medium.
I see. Okay. So have you ever asked one of these psychics or mediums what it looks like on that, quote, other side or the afterlife? Have you ever asked your dad, what do you see?
Oh, all the time. I mean, it was just a common question in my inquiries. And it's different, you know. I mean, it's different for every person. So this is what was always interesting to me. It took me a while to sort of really understand this, is that it depends on the person. Everybody's experience is different. And that's true. You know, I learned that when I was going to school. I got my degree in criminology, and we had a professor who actually had the drama club or whatever come in and play out this scene that was a phony crime, you know, but they were playing this dramatic crime in front of the class. We weren't expecting it. It just happened. Then they left, and everybody had to write down what it was that they just witnessed. And then we had a bunch of people in the class would stand up and read what they wrote. And everybody's experience was different.
Mm.
And so this is true. This is true as we go through life, but this is also true in the afterlife. Everybody's experience in the afterlife is slightly different. Now, what I'm always looking for as the investigator is what's similar. So if I talk to 100 different people through mediums, 100 people in spirit through mediums, and they tell me what the afterlife is like, I'm always looking for what is similar among the stories that they give me. And that's how I sort of draw my conclusions.
So what is it? What is similar?
Oh, well, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but it's interesting because some of it seems seems a little bit cliche. And, you know, there's the light. They always talk about the light and how much love is emanating from that light and the warmth and it that they feel from it and the safety and security that they feel from it and how the luminosity is just so brilliant, but it doesn't hurt your eyes type of a thing, and it just absorbs you. I mean, you know this. You mm-hmm. if you've had a near-death experience,
mm-hmm.
I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's those kinds of things, that everybody's communicating telepathically, you know, and that they can recognize one another even though they're beings of light, or if they want to, they can show themselves to someone, like they can show themselves to a medium however they want to. And in most cases, when they're speaking to a medium, they're going to show themselves so that the person sitting there, which is usually their relative or loved one, will recognize them, but they can show themselves any way they want. It goes on and on and on, but the actual experience into the spirit world, like I said, there's, as you know, with near-death experiences, there's probably maybe 10 to 15 things that you hear.
Right. We're going to discuss those when we come back and talk a little bit more about getting a glimpse into the afterlife. When we come back with my guest, Bob Olson, this is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Our topic is the afterlife. We were talking with Bob Olson, who's the author of a book called Answers About the Afterlife. A private investigator's 15-year research unlocks the mysteries of life after death. Bob was just explaining what that looks like. What does the afterlife look like? And after his 15 years of research and countless interviews, and readings from psychics and mediums through other people, hundreds and hundreds of them, consistently the theme has been, it's filled with light, love, warmth, safety, security. It absorbs you. It's vast. So that sounds like a pretty good environment. That sounds like a pretty good environment. So what do you believe in? Do you believe that this is it? Do you believe that when we die, we die? Do you believe the soul moves on? Is it interesting? If it did move on, where does it go? And can we call it? Can we call it forward as at will? Can we ask those who have moved on to show themselves? Maybe we could find out how when we come back. I will ask Bob that question. All right, this is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is Bob Olson, author of the book called Answers About the Afterlife. And he was a private investigator, and he based his conclusion now on the same type of evidence-based conclusions that he used as an investigator. Logic, reason, pragmatism, and he is trying to avoid using bias, but after hundreds of interviews with psychics and mediums and through his experience, has come to find out a lot of answers. So one of my questions to you, Bob, is can we summons the souls that have crossed over? How can we ask them to show themselves?
Well, yes, we definitely can. And you know, a lot of times we don't even have to ask. I mean, especially after someone has just passed, it's very common that they will make attempts to let you know that they still exist, you know, now in the spiritual form, not the physical form, but where their loved ones are grieving, they want them to know that they haven't just gone away forever and don't exist anymore. They're there, and they're with them. So, you know, this is what we call after-death communications, and they run the gamut from when you're talking about them, the lights will flicker, to you could be talking about them and some song, maybe their favorite song, comes on, to all of a sudden the room fills with some aroma that reminds you of them, whether that be the perfume they wore, the cigar they smoked, or, you know, the banana bread that your aunt used to make all the time, something that reminds you of them. And there's no real reasonable excuse for that aroma being in the room. All kinds of signs like that. They also come to us in our dreams. A lot of people have had dream visitations, is what we call them, and they're the most lucid, memorable dream you'll ever have, and it's not this crazy story that your loved one is involved in. It's actually them just being there, letting you know they're still there, they're okay, they're with you, they're watching over you, and that they want you to be happy. It's little simple messages like that. Millions of people have had these. They question whether they're a real dream or not, but the way that you can identify them is that 30 years later, you feel like that you had the dream the night before. You still remember it that vividly. It's that kind of a dream.
And they're not as erratic or adventurous as a normal type of dream where your psyche's working out the day type of thing.
That's right.
Now, so can you ask the crossed over loved one, can you say, can you show me a sign, or can you come through, why lights, why smells? Is it just because the vibration is easier to come through electricity? I mean, do you have any investigative response for that?
Yeah, I mean, the only response to that is that we recognize it in what's most common. And so in what's most common, my conclusion can only be that it's easier for them to do. You know, there's some things that are more difficult for them to do than others. And, you know, people who are in spirit, and some people think it's because they've been there longer or whatever, it doesn't seem to be that. Just some people are better communicators, and they have a better ability to manipulate things from the spirit world than others. And so I just had one last week, or maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. I had just been talking to somebody on a radio interview about how loved ones will often make the phone ring, and then you answer it and there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
For my mother, she would get just a single ring, and that would be it. I had just talked to someone about it. The very next day, I was sitting watching television with my wife, and I had my cell phone next to me, and it's in this little wallet case, so there was no way of me accidentally touching it. And all of a sudden, it started to ring, and I picked it up, and it was my name. It was me calling myself, which I wouldn't know how to do if I tried. It was my own phone calling itself, and it said Bob Olson, and I'm a junior, so that was my father's name. And of course, when I answered it, there was nothing there. And the coincidence of that happening and me just talking about it the day before was what was amazing to me. You put those two things together. That's how my mind works. I like to, you know, really put a bunch of things together and say, you know, the chances of that happening are so far, you know, it's amazing that it happened. And it was a great message for me to get that from my dad.
Recently, this happened recently.
2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, yeah.
So, and your father passed in 97, right?
He did, yeah.
Did you notice that there was a bit of a lag time between when he passed to when you started to receive these messages? Maybe that was because you weren't looking for it, but do you or have you ever had experience of people telling you that there is a lag time from when the person actually passes to when the communication starts coming through?
You know, I haven't seen any lag time. In fact, and I know some people believe in that. Again, I can only go by the evidence. And I always tell everybody, I start answers about the afterlife and I end it by saying, you know, look, don't take my word for any of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't become your own afterlife investigator. Go out there and do your own research. Use my work as a way to, so you really even know how to get started, you know, because I didn't when I was doing it. But what happened with me, my I did have that aroma. My father, we actually planted lilacs by his gravestone. And because we did, all of a sudden, not just me, but other family members were smelling lilacs in places where they shouldn't have existed. Closed up rooms, closed up houses, in the car, with closed windows. But it was, for me, it was, I was smelling it. So it wasn't just my sister telling me about it. It was me smelling it and recognizing that I shouldn't be smelling it. And then I also had an electronic thing. This was, again, right after my father passed. All of a sudden, my radio started going haywire. And it was an old radio where you had the needle, and the needle would move from left to right, and you turn the knob to move from station to station. Well, all of a sudden, the needle, while the radio was on, just started going from one station to the next, as if today we would push scan, right? And it would scan. Well, it was scanning, but that didn't exist back then, at least not on my old radio. And it was moving, and I grabbed the knob to stop it, because it kind of freaked me out, and the knob didn't work. And it kept going back and forth until finally, for whatever reason, I connected it with my father. And I said, oh, Dad, that's you. And then as soon as I did, it stopped. And now the knob worked again. And it never happened. I had that car and that radio for another 2 years and never happened again.
What if you, I mean, the only reason I ask that is because my experience with this near-death experience that I had was when I went into that gap, that state of complete expanded vastness. It was so alluring, and it was so interesting to hang out in that space for a long time. it's distracting. It's actually something that you want to investigate and hang out in for a little while longer, rather before you want to come back down to the earth plane, which in comparison feels so one-dimensional and heavy. And so it's from my experience, I wanted to float out there for a little longer, and I wanted to hang out in that space a little longer. And it, in comparison, Earth felt a lot more complicated. And so I've heard that there is a immediate communication. Hey, I'm all right. Just a quick message back, and then boom! Wow, this is fascinating to the soul, to the spirit. And I use those words interchangeably. Do you notice the difference between soul and spirit?
I do. And I'll be happy to explain that. That's a little more in-depth explanation. But just to answer what you were saying there is two things. One, the near-death experience is a glimpse into the spirit world, but it's not the same as being permanently dead, okay? So, and it's important that we recognize this because that is sort of a transitionary phase back to our true home, which is what I call the spirit world, the afterlife. And in that transitionary phase, it's this blissful experience because we're getting out of this low, slow energy of the physical body, and we now feel free, and so we're feeling it feels so good. But it's just a temporary phase, and it's just the beginning, and it's not the same as being in the spirit world. And when we're communicating with people in spirit, when they're actually communicating, they're in the spirit world. They've made the transition. They're back home. They're already there. Now, what's interesting about this whole subject is that you wanted to spend more time there, and most, 99% of NDEs do. But that's the whole thing, is time doesn't exist there. So there's so many people who were dead for only seconds or a minute, but they felt like it was hours that they were there. And so because time doesn't exist in the spirit world, it's also this topic of, how much time is necessary before someone can communicate with us is obsolete. It doesn't really matter because time doesn't exist for them. And that's hard for the human
I
brain
see.
to
I see.
understand.
I actually do understand what you're saying. But we have still the attachment here on Earth to chronological time, so we feel that there's a gap. I see. So to the soul, they wouldn't. Okay, so what is the difference between the spirit and soul, and how do you know what the spirit world is like?
So the difference between the spirit and the soul, the way I explain it in answers about the afterlife and try to explain it verbally, which I do better in writing because I have more time. But this is the way I look at it. I start backing up a little bit. I think of we have God, we have the creator, source, whatever your word for that is. And creative intelligence decides it wants to experience life. And so it creates souls in order to make that happen. Now, those souls are that part of us that many of us call the higher self. And it's the part of us that stays in the spirit world for all eternity. Like that's our existence. And then the souls then create spirits to have the individual experiences such as the human life. So the spirit of me, Bob, the spirit of Bob, when I die, my physical body dies, and I return back to the spirit world, my spirit then, in a sense, not that it was ever separate, but from my human perspective, I was separate. My spirit then returns back to the soul and becomes part of that soul again. Yet Bob doesn't disappear. Within that soul could be Bob and George and Sarah and Sally, which could all be different lifetimes that my soul has had, but Bob will always exist there and stay there and will be part of one of the many experiences that my soul has had. But if my loved ones want to communicate through a medium, say, or in a dream, want to communicate with me, or even if they then die and cross over and they want to be greeted by me when they are going home, that part of my soul, which is me, will be there to greet them. It never disappears. And the reason I think this is so important is because a lot of people worry about that, that if my loved one reincarnates before I die and go home, that means they won't be there when I get there, and that's not the case. What happens is when my soul, Bob's soul, decides it wants to experience another lifetime, wants to reincarnate, it actually creates a new spirit of itself to experience that lifetime.
Okay.
And it will be the spirit of, you know, somebody else.
No time, no space type of thing. But how come we don't remember why we come back?
Well, I think because it would be too easy. I believe that you know, life is about having experiences and getting through them and seeing how we do without knowing everything. And so we have this filter, this sort of veil of forgetting that is built into the system. What's interesting about it is when we're young, a lot of children still remember things that we don't remember as we get older.
Right.
So it's not completely gone when we're actually born. Even, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 year olds still remember things from past lives or from the spirit world itself. But as we get older, that memory tends to disappear.
My husband had a friend who was best friend as a child, and through their teenage years, and his friend always said, I'm never going to live to see 21. So he just lived his life really recklessly. And when he finally made it to 21, he was shocked. He's like, wow, I made it. I can't believe I actually made it. And then 2 months later, he died in a plane crash. He had, it's as if he knew his entire life he wasn't going to make it, and shocked himself when he did. And then the soul just 2 months later expired. And I wonder, what was that soul doing beforehand? Was it in an old body that couldn't move and was unable and full of disease? And so it made that desire, that rocket launch that it desired to come back as a just living full out and for a short amount of time? Or was that soul ahead of time a baby that didn't quite even make it to day two, day three? I mean, how do you know? How do you know what that soul is coming back to do and what it was in the past life, if that exists?
You know, I think we're motivated in certain ways, in a very subconscious way, to do things. Now, if we're talking about young children, a child who lives a day, you know, there probably the purpose of that lifetime is less about that soul's experience and more about the experience that the parents, say in this case, would have.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's the part of the experience that exists in the spirit world. So the soul of that baby, even though it only lived a day, still has experiences in connection with that child, those parents. Mm-hmm. And it continues through the whole lifetime of those parents, because that will always affect them in one way or another. And it doesn't matter how long we live. But the other thing with your friend here, this is kind of a common occurrence. I mean, I have a friend who died at 38, and he was exactly the same way. Now, he didn't think he was going to die early, but he somehow was motivated to live life to the fullest, as if he were trying to pack it all into a short period of time.
Right.
And I think that somehow the soul or the spirit guides of that person are sort of trying to motivate them to do that, and that's the purpose of that lifetime, is to just experience a whole bunch of things in a shorter amount of time.
Have you heard this consistently?
I've heard it in many different ways, but yes, it is. In some ways, it's consistent. Sometimes what will happen, like in your friend's case, I was kind of half expecting that he was still alive. Sometimes what can happen is we can feel that way because we died at a young age in the past life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that memory that has us with this subconscious expectation that's what's going to happen again.
So he would have recreated that experience?
I think because free will trumps everything, we certainly can do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so a memory of dying young in the past life or a more recent past life can
bleed through.
Motivated, yeah.
Interesting. Well, a lot of stories to come up. We're gonna continue this conversation with Bob Olson. a lot more to share, a lot more questions to answer when we come back. This is Lisa Gar, you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.